Bruce, how are you?
Great, Jay. Nice to meet you.
Bruce Dietzen, a now retired Dell executive, set out to make the world's greenest car. After being inspired by Henry Ford, who made a hemp car way back in 1941, Bruce decided to produce a sportier version of his own.
That, of course, is Jay Leno, comedian, TV personality, and automobile aficionado. Our guest today is not Jay Leno, but Bruce Dietzen, entrepreneur, an inventor, a forward thinker who thinks farmers can and will save the world. How are they going to do that, and what does this have to do with a sports car made out of hemp? This is the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Herlock. And on today's show, our guest will explain carbon-negative technology and how moving to a plant-based manufacturing system can mitigate climate change. We'll take a quick break and then jump right into our conversation with Bruce Dietzen. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to the Lancaster Farming Podcast. Bruce, could you introduce yourself for us?
Yes, my name is Bruce Michael Dietzen, and I'm the founder of Renew Sports Cars and Carbon Negative Technology.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about this carbon negative technology?
Yes. What we endeavor to do is to experiment and develop technologies that will allow the industrial sector to make products that actually help to reduce the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, as opposed to adding a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere.
Okay. Well, how does it work? And what needs to happen in industry before this sort of ramps up and becomes commonplace?
Well, there's a a phenomena that happens right now in manufacturing most things, and that is there is a carbon footprint. Every time you make something out of steel or plastic or concrete and just about all materials that are not plant-based materials, and it's a very significant amount of CO2 that's generated. Industry in itself generates about 21% of the CO2 that is generated by mankind right now. So in the future, as everyone pretty much knows, we not only have to, in order to keep the world's temperature from going 2 degrees Celsius above where it is right now, which would be catastrophic, as a human society, we not only have to stop burning fossil fuels, everybody's pretty much aware of that, but at this point, we've waited so long to stop burning fossil fuels that an additional measure is absolutely required, and that is to reduce the amount of CO2 that is being generated from other sectors, etc. In other words, we have to make things that are carbon negative. That chair you're sitting on, the car you drive, the building you live in, in the future will be made of carbon-negative plant material grown by farmers.
So reading between the lines here, you're saying that farmers will save the world?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right now, we rely a lot on taking things out from beneath the ground, and that's what's destroying the earth. And we literally farmers are literally going to save the earth by growing the raw resources that are required in order to manufacture what we need.
So the Earth will survive. It's not so much the planet we're talking about, but it's the living things on the planet?
Yeah, the Earth will always survive. we as a species and just about every other species on the planet will not survive if we continue on the path that we're headed now. And that's not my opinion. That's what the International Panel of on Climate Control has come out and stated very emphatically.
Right. So what you're saying is we need to harness life in order to save life.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there's a sports car involved here, though, isn't there?
Well, yes. I really got started down this path about 6 years ago, trying to design my own sports car. And in the process, I looked around at various different unique and beautiful cars, and I wanted something very unique. And in the process, I ran across the story about Henry Ford making a car from plant material and also fueling it with plant material. And that was debuted in August of 1941. And so that inspired me to make a similar type of vehicle. But obviously it's much different looking than what he made in 1941. But I made a car with a body made out of industrial hemp, and also have it running on fuel from agricultural residues. And that's just the same thing that Henry Ford did back in 1941. He was involved in a movement called Chemergy, along with George Washington Carver and others, William Hale. Their whole philosophy basically was that we should be making everything we possibly can from the farm.
Imagine where we'd be now if that caught on back in 1941.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very, very different world. We would not have this climate crisis that we have today. And we would have a much safer world. We wouldn't have as many wars over petroleum, as an example, as well. But you can really just imagine, just to take a look around the room that you're in right now, I can pretty much tell you at least half the stuff in the room could be made from plants that are grown above the ground instead of minerals and petroleum that's pulled from the ground.
So you're proposing what sounds like an industrial solution, but there has to be a political solution there too. How do you change the political will?
Well, it's already changing. As you know, the Farm Bill has passed the House and the Senate here in the United States just recently. And what that means is that part of the Farm Bill is a lot of changes for the hemp industry specifically. And hemp, of course, has always been a very good resource for all types of industries. It used to be, several hundred years ago, it used to be one of the most grown crops in the world and one of the most valued crops of the world, because it can be used from anything from its fibers to its oils to the medicines that it can make, etc. It's just a tremendously valuable plant. And so that's now going to be grown across the United States. It will be legal to grow it across the United States. And that's pretty exciting for the farming community, from what I understand.
How many acres of hemp would we need to be growing to sort of make the changes to industry and climate that you envision?
There's a book out there called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And I think the author, Jack Herer, who has passed away, he put some number on that. I don't remember offhand. But he did forecast that someday we will be in a situation where hemp will be the most grown crop in the world. So that's a lot. I don't know what the number is, but that's a lot.
So the world population is growing. Middle class is expanding throughout the world, and people are consuming more and more. How do you keep up with that through a plant-based manufacturing?
Great question. And it gets us back to this concept of making things from carbon negative plant material. You're right. We will continue to reproduce and we will continue to consume. There are pundits out there that suggest that we stop doing both of those things, but it's going to be very hard to do that. Economies are all based on the fact that they're always having to be having to be growing in order for politicians to say they successfully did something. So what needs to be done, and I don't think it's just a need, I think it's going to be inevitable. What is going to happen is we will, as a human society, we will become quite familiar with the idea that most everything we need is made from plants. And the hemp plant is probably the most versatile plant to use.
So getting back to the car that you built from hemp, where did you source that hemp?
Well, there was no woven hemp available, no domestic woven hemp available when I started on this. And I don't believe there is any still here in the Western world. So I had to get it imported from China. China and Romania are the two big places where woven hemp is manufactured today. And it may be that that industry, the textile industry for hemp, springs back again here in the United States in the future. I suspect it probably will.
Do you have plans to build more cars, or are you stopping at one sports car from hemp?
Well, actually, we're in the process of finishing up the first customer production car. It's very much a boutique business. And so we just build them to order. And but that's not the only thing that we're looking at doing. Right now, we're also working right now on a wind turbine, a residential or small business wind turbine that is made out of hemp plastic. And then also an e-bike, an electric bike, with a body that's made from hemp plastic. And we're always entertaining other ideas and ready to partner with other companies as well that might want to have our expertise, and we would show them how to do this.
Okay, where can people find you?
They can either go to renewsportscars.com or carbonnegative.technology.
Okay. Do you have a group of farmers that you're working with now, or do you plan to now that the Farm Bill is changing things here in the U.S.?
I don't work with farmers directly. So I don't have the in-depth knowledge of what it takes to grow hemp, but I have met some at the various different shows. Right now, when it comes to hemp, the people that are the big market is in CBD. If you're familiar with that, cannabidiol,
yep,
which is one of the ingredients in the flowers of the hemp plant, and so that's what's really hot in Canada. It's the hemp seeds that were big initially, and in the future, you're going to see more and more demand for things like the fiber coming off the plant as well, as it's adopted and used more and more in various different textile industries and the plastics industry.
Do you have any advice for those interested in growing hemp?
I think get into it on a small scale initially, and network yourself with other folks that are successfully growing hemp. There are pilot projects in most of the states around the country. I know they've had one there in Pennsylvania,
yep,
over the last couple of years, and now it's everything is going to be opening up. So yeah, I would start out small and learn everything you possibly can. And obviously, as with any other crop, make sure you've got it sold before you put the seed in the ground.
Yeah, that seems to be the issue here. It's like, where's the market? Farmers don't want to grow it until they know there's a market.
It's been inhibited, number one, because it was considered a Schedule I drug, even though it doesn't get you high. It's just some very archaic laws that are out there, ridiculous laws. And so as a result, it was federally illegal to, if you made any money, you couldn't put it into the bank. Banks wouldn't take your money, and if you grew some hemp, you couldn't send it over the state line. That would be a federal offense, etc. All these really stupid things because it was considered a dangerous drug, and it really wasn't. What we're going to find is that hemp is probably going to be a bigger industry than marijuana, quite frankly, and that's its cousin. simply because it has so many uses. There are numerous people out there that are stating that this is a very good possibility that it's going to be bigger than marijuana. And everybody knows how big the marijuana boom is now.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty big. And we have some senators from Kentucky to thank for a lot of this, don't we?
Yeah, Mitch McConnell, the Speaker of the House, really pushed through these bills. And he's someone that I hope to be talking to this next year and suggest something, an adjunct to existing tax credit bills that are out there. As you know, there was a lot of tax credits that were given towards people that would buy electric cars. And then there were tax credits that came in for solar panels. And then tax credits for wind turbines. And in order to make up the difference in terms of the cost of using plant-based materials to do things like making plastics, there has to be some sort of a tax credit that is given for manufacturers and or consumers or businesses that use plant-based materials like hemp in order to make their products. Because again, the way that's going to help is we're going to actually be reducing the CO2 in the atmosphere instead of adding CO2 in the atmosphere. And in fact, since you and I first spoke, I found there's actually a bill that's going through the House right now. I think it's H.R. 3149. I could be wrong on that number. I believe it's called the Renewable Chemical Act. And it basically is going to give manufacturers of plastics about a 20% tax credit for materials that they use in order to make their plastics if they are bio-based materials.
Wow,
so
20%,
that's something I wasn't even aware of a week ago when we first spoke. And so I think, here I was saying this is going to happen. Boom, I turn around, it's already happened.
So, I like that.
But let me give you one other thing. It's kind of a high-level deal here.
Sure.
And getting back to the car that we make, we're just popping out the front bonnet or the hood and the fenders for this new car that we're making right now. And it weighs about 28 pounds. Now, if I was the typical car, sports car manufacturer, I would probably want to make that out of carbon fiber, right, to make it super light.
Okay.
Well, if we would have made this bonnet out of carbon fiber, we probably would have saved about 3 pounds. So it would probably weigh 25 pounds instead of 28 pounds. Hmm. Now, the typical engineer would say, wow, that's great. We're going to get better gas mileage. And, we have to meet these gas mileage edicts by, sometime in 2025 or something like that. And they think it would be great. Well, here's the downside of using something like carbon fiber. The amount of CO2 that is generated to make that 25-pound hood is something on the order of almost 500 pounds of CO2 is literally dumped into the atmosphere. I mean, it literally is pumped. You can't see it, right? But it literally is almost 500 pounds of CO2 going to the atmosphere.
Wow.
Right? Now, on the other hand, since we use plant-based materials, it's, the fibers are all 100% hemp, and the resin that holds it together is all 100% bio-based. Right now, we're using a soy-based epoxy. Those two together are completely made from plant materials, and the plants, of course, take CO2 out of the atmosphere. And now if you take those plant materials and you make it into a durable good like a car hood, right, that's actually taking 21 pounds out of the atmosphere. So the difference is over 500 pounds.
Wow.
Over 500 pounds in terms of the embedded CO2. And that's what we have to do. There's so much fossil fuel that's being burned right now just to make things like steel, fiberglass, carbon fiber, you name it. I mean, it's just a tremendous amount of CO2. So we can not only avoid generating CO2 by using plant materials to make everything. We can also sequester CO2 directly out of the atmosphere. It's very exciting. And on top of that, if the roots are left in place, right, which not they aren't always, but if they are, you have another 20% of CO2 is back, taken out of the atmosphere, and it's down underneath the ground again.
So what would you say to folks who either deny climate change or think we couldn't possibly power our world without fossil fuels?
I make it a habit not to argue with fools. So I won't even comment there.
Fair.
But those people are very rare. They were much more prevalent 10 years ago. There's not too many people that still deny that we have to take measures. I think it was only a few weeks ago that there was a congressional report that came out and said that we only have 12 years left to take massive action, or we're not going to stop this 2 degrees change in the Celsius change in the atmosphere. So I don't think there's too many naysayers anymore. There will always be a few leftovers, but you know, I don't worry about it.
Right. There's some interesting things happening, I guess, in Congress. Some of the new members of the House are proposing, what do they call that, a Green New Deal?
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
Very exciting. Yeah. Yeah. The new... I think there's a new congresswoman from New York, Cortez Ocasio, mm-hmm. but she's really on fire on top of this. I do plan to connect with her sometime this year, hopefully, and get involved with that somehow, and also propose this idea again that we give like a 30% tax credit to consumers and manufacturers for making things out of plant material. And that's something that we really need to do. And guess what? When that happens, it's going to be just unbelievable. The amount of bioplastics, you're going to see a huge shift from petroleum being used for plastics to hemp being used for bioplastics. Hemp will probably be the number one feedstock for plastics. And it'll be used for other things too. You'll see the cotton industry is going to take a huge hit. I believe something like about 20% of all of the pesticides and the fertilizers or something like that. It's probably pesticides that are used by agriculture go into growing cotton. And cotton requires something like twice as much water as well as hemp. And, you know, the clothes that you're wearing right now, you probably have a lot of cotton on right now. But the other thing with hemp, it's much more durable than cotton. It's a much stronger fiber, so clothing lasts longer, et cetera. So it's just a wonderful plan. It's just going to take off like crazy, I think, over the next few years.
With hemp-based plastics, how does that work with recycling? Would they be easily recyclable?
Great question. You can make just about any kind of plastic out of hemp, right? So you can make stuff that can be recycled, can't be recycled, stuff that's biodegradable. So it's not quite a drop in solution. There's additional engineering that has to occur to use the hemp, but it's not a monumental feet. But I'm glad you bring this up, because there's a kind of a misunderstanding out there in the plastics industry. There are a lot of people who are running around going like, we need to have everything biodegradable. Well, actually, that's not true. If we make most of the durable goods that we make right now around the world out of recyclable plastic made from hemp, then you can recycle it and recycle it and recycle it. Obviously, it steps down in terms of its usefulness, but eventually it might be something that's being used to pave roads. But when you do that, whenever you make more plastic that way, and it's not biodegradable, you're simply sequestering more CO2 out of the atmosphere. So the more stuff you make out of bioplastics, the more CO2 gets reduced out of the atmosphere. So it's just a great thing. So it's the best thing right now, I think, that we can do as a society in order to mitigate climate crisis is to encourage corporations to make as much stuff as they can out of hemp and make it recyclable. Don't make it biodegradable. Because even biodegradable stuff, you know, all that stuff that's floating around in the ocean right now, if you make that biodegradable, well, it biodegrades over time, right? And so now you have little tiny pieces of plastic that are getting eaten by the fish, right? And so we end up with all those good BPAs and this sort of stuff in our food. So that wouldn't be a good thing. So the best answer is to make everything we possibly can from recyclable bio-based plastics.
So would industry have to completely reinvent itself, or could existing infrastructure sort of retool itself?
And it's not going to take I'm not a total guru on this yet, but I don't believe that it's going to take a complete retooling in order to switch over to bio-based plastics. As an example right now, the epoxy that we use to hold our bodies together, right, on the car, that looks, tastes and smells, everything, you know, exactly like regular petroleum-based epoxy. Mm. It's a complete drop-in. There's no change in how we use it. Of course, how it's produced is probably a little bit different. Probably has a slightly different process, but it's a drop-in for my industry. Okay. Use it just the same as if I were using petrol-based epoxy.
Are there any other companies that you know of who are doing work in your realm here?
In terms of
using carbon negative technology and building things with a carbon negative mindset.
Yeah, probably the one that stands out the most. There's probably a half dozen to a dozen small companies around the world that are making construction materials out of hemp. And there are numerous homes that are made out of hempcrete, and that's a real big win as well. That's where they use the inner part of the stalk. It's called herd. It's a kind of a woody matter, and that gets mixed with lime, and it's a replacement for cement. And so it's actually a carbon negative solution because it's actually locks away more CO2 than it actually creates.
So. Excellent. How did Jay Leno end up driving your car?
He had seen some of the press that we had gotten, mm-hmm. and contacted me, and his people did, and they were doing an episode on out of the box, right, ideas.
Okay.
So they just contacted me and said, you know, would you like to show us your car and have Jay drive it? And I said, sure. So we shipped the car out there, and it was really neat to meet him. It was funny because we were talking about the same sort of thing. Why did I create the car? Mm-hmm. And he understood it. He understood the reason for doing this, to try to showcase the idea of making something that's carbon negative. Mm-hmm. He came around to it. He didn't quite grasp it at first, but at least he didn't make a bunch of, you know, can you smoke it jokes, right?
Right.
As a comedian, you'd expect it, but he probably, as a professional comedian, he probably knows that that's the first joke people always, it always comes to mind. So, but it was his band of, the sound crew and the film crew that were there, they were all pretty much in their 30s. And they came up to me at the end of the show, and a couple of the guys said, you know, this is probably the most important car that Jay Hammer had on the show. And I go, wow, that is saying something.
Right.
So Jay liked the car, but good. His crew, you know, they all understood where we have to go and how important it is that we do something to save the planet. So right. They totally got it.
getting back to the marijuana stigma, you know, in the course of this podcast, I find it very frustrating that people, you know, always go there. And I want to just get past that and say, no, there's something way more important going on here. But
yes.
You know, it is what it is.
But, you know, it is a huge, I think a huge change has happened in the last decade. Mm-hmm. Just a huge change. And again, thanks to you doing shows like this and other ones, the stigma is going away. And I can tell you, I was just talking to a friend of mine who's a venture capitalist trying to raise money for the whole hemp industry in general. And, you know, he said that your timing is perfect. If you tried to do this 10 years ago, you would fail. Just everything is happening right now with the farm bill going through and the tax credits coming. It's just the... Anybody that thinks that hemp is a bad thing is going to be completely in the dark. So far behind, they think they're coming in first.
Well, Bruce Dietzen, thanks again for taking the time with us here on the Lancaster Farming Podcast.
Well, thank you, Eric. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to today's show. These are exciting times in the world of agriculture and industrial hemp. We still have a lot of exciting people to talk to. Hey, and if you're one of them, send me an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. I am your host, Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper.